All right. Good evening, and welcome to the first in the card mini-series. This is what we called Purim and Pesach, Frequently Asked Questions. The first two will be Purim, and then probably the latter four will be Pesach. So stay tuned. Rabbi Ziering will be giving the shiur next week. Also a Purim topic, although I'm blanking on what it is for next week, but it's also a Purim topic. Have it to remember what he's doing next week? No.
The challah.
Oh, right, separating challah from shalach manos, which is a very practical question. People don't realize that this is an issue. But but even if you bake things in batches, and each batch uses less than the amount of flour that involves challah, that requires challah, if you put them together in a receptacle, then potentially you are obligated to separate challah. And so the question becomes, what if you bake far in advance and you store everything in your freezer? Cases like that, could you actually be obligated in separating challah? So that's what I'll be hearing here next week. Please make sure to be here. But for tonight, our topic is Purim in Ramot. When do they celebrate Purim in Ramot? With the expansion of Yerushalayim, as predicted in the Navi, where do we observe Shushan Purim in developments that are outside of Yerushalayim? In particular, we'll take a look at the case of Ramot. It's a good case study. So I'm very grateful to Shimi Bernstein for making the copies for this and doing it in color so that you could see things properly on the map. The main body here in your picture, the main area basically in the southern half of this map is Yerushalayim proper. You can see if your eyesight is good, you can see Machane Yehuda, you can see Hebrew University is marked on there. Down in the southeastern part of it, you can see the Old City. But as you work your way north and west, you see there's an area marked as Har Chotzvim. That's the area of Sanhedria. And then the highway goes north from there, Highway 1, and it goes into a new section called Ramot. Not so new anymore, but it goes to a separate section that's called Ramot. Ramot is not contiguous with Yerushalayim. In between Ramot and Yerushalayim is a little bit of a forest and some road. There are not houses all the way through. Based on Google Maps, if you were to try to walk from Sanhedria to the nearest of the Ramot, which I believe is Ramot Alon, you'd have a walk of a few kilometers. So the question is, do they say, well, we are part of Yerushalayim, and therefore, since if you were to either go all the way from the Old City with its wall, as we'll talk about, straight, do we say this is somehow connected such that you should observe Purim on Shushan Purim on the 15th day of Adar? Do we say perhaps that you can see from there into Yerushalayim, and therefore you should observe Purim on the 15th day of Adar? Or do we say that actually it's a separate area, and therefore Purim should be observed not on the 15th day of Adar, but on the 14th day of Adar? I'm just starting the recording on my phone because I can see the battery is low for some reason on this recorder. It's a brand new battery. Nonetheless, so I'm just going to start it on here.
Okay. So, shifting recorders. So I gave you in source number 2 on your sheet links to two articles that are very worthwhile if you want to do your own research on this. The first one is a tshuva of Asher Weiss on the issue from 1997. It's kind of odd that I have 3 volumes of Minchas Asher, and it's not in any of them. He didn't publish it in Minchas Asher, even though it's a very serious practical tshuva for what people should be doing in Ramot. Nonetheless, he didn't publish it yet there, but it is available online. And then the other is an article from A YU to Go by Rabbi Eitan Schnall and the Koelion there, where he also collects some material on the topic. Both are worthwhile. Okay, so we have to start from square one. Before we get to Ramot, we need to know what the rules are for walled cities. That's really the start of this. Remember that in Megillas Esther, in the part that nobody pays attention to, right, also known as Perek Test, we're told about the war that takes place where the Jews defend themselves against their attackers. And we're told that the war is on the 14th day of Adar. And then in the city of Shushan, they request an extra day to fight off their attackers, and that's the 15th day of Adar. And then we get the description of what the celebration shall be thereafter. And it's in source number 3, the pasuk from the 9th chapter in Megillas Esther. Al kein ha-yehudim ha-perazim ha-yoshevim be'arei ha-perazos. Therefore, the Jews who are in the outlying open, not outlying, but in the open cities. Okay, the term prazim is understood to refer to open, unwalled cities. So the Jews who dwell in unwalled cities, osim es yomar ba'a asar l'chodesh adar, they make the 14th day of Adar, simcho mishteh v'yom tov, days of joy, feasting, and yom tov, umishlamach manos ish l'reyehu, and sending gifts to each other. So those who live in unwalled cities celebrate Purim on the 14th. That's the statement. The distinction is not Shushan versus everybody else. The distinction is between walled cities and unwalled cities. It also doesn't tell us when walled cities should celebrate Purim. Right? The pasuk only says, if you're in an open city, then do it on the 14th. It doesn't say what you do if you're in a walled city. That comes in the Gemara. We begin with the first Mishnah in Maseches Megillah in source number 4. Krachin ha-mukafin choma mimos Yoshua bin Nun, Koren b'chamisha asar. Cities that have had walls since, in the days of Yehoshua bin Nun. Side note, based on the Gemara in Megillah itself, on Daf Dalet Amud Aleph, that doesn't mean that the city had a wall when the Jews entered Israel under Yehoshua. It includes cities that had walls built in by the people at that time, as long as the city was settled. Well, that's its own discussion. It's first a wall, then the city is settled, as the Gemara puts it. But if the city gets a wall in Yehoshua's generation, that is called a walled city. So the Mishnah says, cities that had walls read Megillah on the 15th day of Adar, what we call Shushan Purim, and Kfarim Va'ayaros Gedolos, whereas towns and even big towns, but they don't have a wall, Koren Barba Asar, they read Megillah on the 14th day of Adar. And the Gemara there, on Daf Beis Amud Beis, goes into a nice discussion of how you learn this rule from Megillas Esther. We're not going to go into the play on the Psukim at the moment. However, it's worth noting which cities count here? Which cities count as being walled cities? What did it say in the Mishnah? From the days of Yehoshua ben Nun. What in the world does Yehoshua ben Nun have to do with Megillas Esther? Why do I care that it had a wall in the days of Yehoshua ben Nun? Why do I care whether we had a wall in the days of Yeshua? So in fact, if you look at source number 5, we find that not everybody agreed. Here's a Tana, Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha. Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha Omer, Krachin ha-mukafin choma mimosach ha-shverosh, karin b'chamisha asar. He says, I care if it had a wall in the days of ha-shverosh. I don't care about walls from the days of Yeshua. My time with Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha, what's his rationale? Ki Shushan, he says, because the comparison is to Shushan. Ma Shushan mukefas choma mimos achashverosh v'koren b'chamisha asar. Shushan had a wall from the days of achashverosh, and they read on the 15th. Av kolshim mukefas choma mimos achashverosh koren b'chamisha asar. So to any other city that has a wall from the days of achashverosh, they're going to read on the 15th. It's a very logical argument. Just like Shushan, that's what we do here. V'tana didan maitayma. So why did our Mishnah not say that? Why did our Mishnah say from the days of Yehoshua? Yalif prazi prazi. The answer is because we have a gzera shava. We link the word prazi, this odd term for an open city, as it appears in two different places. Ksiv hacha, it says in the Megillah, as we saw in number 3, Alkein ha-yehudim ha-perazim, the Jews who live in these open cities. Uchsiv hasam, and then you have also in Parshas Va'eschanan, talking about the cities that the Jews conquer when they're entering the land, levad me'arei ha-perazi harbe ma'od, aside from many open cities. So, ma'alahalan mukefas choma mimos Yehoshua ben Nun, avkan mukefas choma mimos Yehoshua ben Nun. There, it's about the status of a city in the days of Yehoshua. So too here, we're talking, in the Megillah, we're talking about cities that have a wall in the days of Yehoshua. So based on the Bavli, it's a very odd gezeirah shava when you think about it. Because what we're saying is, the cities that observe on the 15th of Nisan are the cities that had a wall in the days of Yehoshua, because the term we use for the cities that don't have a wall is associated with cities that don't have a wall in the days of Yehoshua. This seems like a very backward way to get to this. And you have to wonder, like, really? I mean, at the time of Megillas Esther, they're sitting there making this Gezeirah Shavah in this very roundabout way. The Yerushalmi gives a different answer. It's a much more straightforward answer. The Yerushalmi, in source number 6, Rabbi Simon b'shem Rabbi Shua ben Levi, says, Chilku kavod la'eretz Yisrael, shahaisa chareva ba'osan hayamim, v'taluosa mimos Yerushua ben Nun. He says they gave honor to the land of Israel, which was in ruins in those days, right? Remember that the Purim story, the story of Achashverosh, takes place after Cyrus has already allowed the Jews to go back, likely during the period when our construction of the Beis HaMikdash has been halted by the Samaritan opposition. That's commonly understood to be the timing. And certainly before there's a wall for Yerushalayim, and certainly before we've built up any cities. So the land of Israel at this point is in ruins. And therefore, if you were to say Shushan and all the walled cities, you would have to exclude the cities of Israel. And it's considered to be an insult to the cities of Israel if you're going to say those are unwalled cities, because being a walled city isn't just a matter of we have defenses. It's an element of stature, right? In the same way that you say this is not a real Jewish community unless it has a kosher restaurant or unless it has 3 different Erevin for the different groups that won't hold from the each other's Erevin. You know, there are certain ways that we define a real city. So a real city is a city that has a wall. If you remember the beginning of Sefer Nehemiah, right? Nehemiah talks about how he was so upset, he was grieving because he heard the news that Yerushalayim doesn't have a wall. It's in ruins and it doesn't have a wall. That's a specific point that he emphasizes when he speaks to the king and gets permission to come back and lead the building of a wall for Yerushalayim. So the Yerushalmi says, if you were to tell us Shushan and cities that had walls in the days of Shushan, those are the ones who get to read on the 15th, it would be an insult to Eretz Yisrael, to all those cities that don't have a wall. Then, therefore, we go back to the times of Yehoshua. I still find it to be strange, but less strange, frankly, than Prazi. Either way, that's the halacha. The halacha is cities that had a wall in the days of Yehoshua bin Nun and afterwards. Meaning the Gemara Megillah Daf Gimel Amud Beis says it isn't that it had to have had a wall since the days of Yehoshua, from Yehoshua's time until now, but if it had a wall in the days of Yehoshua, that's sufficient. Because otherwise, what was your point with Yerushalayim? You would still end up excluding Yerushalayim because it went through a period when it didn't have a wall. So what have you accomplished? So if it had a wall at that, you know, the snapshot theory, if at that moment in time, in Yehoshua's generation, it had a wall, that's good enough. Now we'll read Megillah on the 15th of Nisan, even today. One key debate is important to note right now at the outset, because it's going to have ramifications throughout the shir. And that is this question. Do we look at this and say, the reason why we want this walled city to read on the 15th of Nisan, do we look at it and say it's because it was like Shushan back in the day? When it had a wall, it was like Shushan. That's one way to look at it. Or do we say it's a function of the identity of the community now? It's a function of their identity today. Keep in mind that question. The Chazon Ish is going to take the view that it's about the identity of the community today. Rabbi Shua Leib Diskin, Rabbi Chiel Michal Tokachinsky, they're going to disagree. And it remains a debate after their period in the beginning of the 20th century. The debate continues after them. The Minchas Yitzchak is on the side that it's about the historical identity, with Shlomo Zalman Orbach and Rav Asher Weiss will be on the side of the Chazon Ish, that it's about its contemporary identity. You'll see, and we'll clarify more what this means as we go through the examples. What are the limits of a walled city? Right? You can see on your map the area in the southeast area. You have the old city marked Western Wall, right? So is that the limits of the walled city? Because that's what had a wall back in the days of Yehoshua ben Nun. So the answer is ha machlokes. We have two views. One view is that the boundary is physical. as soon as you hit a meaningful physical gap, the city ends. That's the termination of this city. We're going to add on Samuch and Nira for those who are familiar with the Gemara Megillah, but the city itself ends where there is a physical gap. And this comes from the laws of Tchum Shabbos, the boundary for Shabbos purposes. You know that there is a halacha that says that I'm not allowed to travel outside of my town on Shabbos. Has nothing to do with carrying. Meaning I can carry in my Eruv. But once I hit the end of the residences, my city ends. I have 2,000 amos after that, 2,000 cubits after that, and then case closed. Such that the Mishnah in Erevin says, it's in source number 7, I'm going to say it outside, but I wanted you to have the source at least available to you, that once there is a gap of 70 and two-thirds amos, the city ends. Based on Rav Moshe Feinstein's definition of a tefach, you're talking about roughly 38, 39 meters. If you have a gap of 39 meters without a residence, you've now ended your city. Unless there's another city that is beyond that, but if you were to give them their 39 meters, and my city, it's 39 meters, then they would merge. You follow? In other words, where I'm sitting is the walled city. Where Jeffrey is sitting is a walled city. If our cities are 141 meters apart or less, then we're considered to be merged. It's not about walled city, it's a Shabbos law. But then we're considered to be one big city. You follow? It's a law for Tchum. So since my 70 and your 70 merge, we're good. Then we're considered one city. That's the principle.
Parks,
yeah.
Still count. You can get that and get like a park.
So parks raise a whole other interesting question of how I define residence. I'm not going to go there right now, but it's a good question. The question is how you define residence as far as Tchum Shabbos. What if you have a business park? What if you have factories? What if you know, there are all sorts of different very interesting questions that come up in that regard. But the Chazon Ish writes in source number 8 that the same rule that we just applied for Tchum is going to apply when it comes to walled cities and Megillas Esther. In source number 8, he says, Niradim nitosfu batim chutz l'choma. He says, let's say houses are added outside of the walled city. Ava pi she'arichu chutz l'tchum. Even if they go beyond the Tchum. V'yesh batim she'enam smuchim ve'enam nirim. I'm going to skip that phrase because it doesn't mean anything for us yet. Mikomakom korin b'tesvav. We still read it on, we read Megillah on the 15th. Kevin Shekol Ha'ir Ka'arba Amos Umikru Kulan Tochatchum. Because the whole city is considered a single unit. Ubilvad Shaloye Benein Migrash Panoi Shivim Ama. As long as you don't have a 70 Ama gap or 141 Amos if you have another city past that. So the Chazon Ish says, my city does not end with the wall. My city extends beyond the wall. As long as I don't get a gap of 70 amos, it keeps right on going. Which also means that the definition of my city is subject to change. Right? Go back to your map on the first page. Yerushalayim at one point was defined by the wall around the old city. And then they started building outward. Chazon Ish says, as long as they keep building in a contiguous way, right? Without these gaps, you have new areas that start to read on the 15th of Nisan, on the 15th of Adar. And it's just going to keep on going as you build. Rabbi Chiel Michal Tukachinsky thought that was crazy. He said, absolutely not. In source number 9, Ira Kodesh Va'amikdash, his very celebrated work, which primarily is known for summing up the debate involving Ritzvi Yosh Kalasher and the debate about whether you could restart Karbanos, Bizman Hazeh. But he has this long discussion in Perechav Zayin in the third volume it's the second volume because of the way they print them, but it's called Chela Gimel, of Yerakodesh Ramikdash, about this debate of extending Yerushalayim and where you would read the Megillah, when you would read the Megillah. He says, Kim'at barur lefi'ani yizdaiti, is almost certain in my mind. Shekan be'inyin kriyas Megillah mischashvim rakim kav ha'choma ha'atika. That when it comes to reading the Megillah, we only care about where the original ancient wall was. V'loem iburei ha'ir. We don't care about these added portions of the city. She'ain't din mikra Megillah b'krachim doma klala din Shabbos. He says you're comparing Megillah on Purim with the laws of Shabbos. Hasam b'Shabbos talei kol ikar b'yishuv ha'ir. The reason for the law regarding Shabbos is because that's your community, and if you build outward, that's your community. As long as the city extends, so fine, you can walk that entire distance. When it comes to Megillah reading, it doesn't have to do with where the population is. He says every new area that's built up has the status of an open area. Unless it has a wall from the days of in the days of Yehoshua. He says, why do I care if things extend further? He says the only factor that matters is the ancient wall. So here you have an iteration of the debate that I highlighted for you. The debate is, what is this city like today? Versus, I don't care what the city is like today. It's all about what it was back in the day when it had a wall in the days of Yehoshua. The Chazon Ish says, it's about the community. And since it's about the community, it's wherever the community is now. Rav Tkachinsky, older than the Chazon Ish, my chronology is backwards, technically. But Rav Tkachinsky says, absolutely not. Megillah is about what it was in the days of Yehoshua, and I don't care if they're building outside the wall. At the wall is where things stop. And then he has a very long discussion in which he, it's not that long, but in which he says, people tell me you can't know where the wall was. Yes, you can. And he goes through the different eras of the walls of Yerushalayim to explain where the wall ought to be. If I knew my geography of Yerushalayim better, I would have done it for you on the map. But I don't have it clear enough in my head. So that's the argument. Now, Ramot, no matter what you do, is not going to be within this because you don't have your gap there, as I mentioned in the beginning, is too long. You don't have a 70 amma or 140 amma clearance. You're talking about a couple of kilometers. So that's not going to help you now. Although in the article I referenced by Rabbi Schnall in the beginning, he notes that there's been a plan over the years to try to build burgenin, to build huts along the way, such that it will be considered contiguous as far as Purim is concerned. The problem is that there is this forest in between, and there are environmental concerns, and it's not so simple and straightforward. But that's one view. One view is that it's fundamentally a physical boundary to the city. The other view, and this is radical, is that it's not about, not physical boundary, but physical contiguity. The other view is that it's about being one reshus, being one domain. Reshus is a magic word. What is reshus? Why is reshus a magic word? Where in halacha do we care about the word reshus? Shabbos. What if they're not physically contiguous, but they share an eruv? You build an eruv that's around Yerushalayim as well as Ramot. You have a gap in between that doesn't have any houses, but it's not parkland, it's not an area that's going to be carpet for the hookah ladira or some problem like that. You have a common era for both of them. I view that as being one city. Rosh Shlomo Salman Arbach said, you bet, in source number 10, from Halicha Shlomo, Kol makom hakolul betikun ha'erev in shal akrach, nidon kikrach. If it's within the Erev, that is good enough. And in fact, Rebbe Yashiv is cited as accepting this idea as well regarding Ramot. The Kloisenberger, the Divrei Yatziv, as well as Rav Sternbach and the Moed and Muzmanim, as well as Rav Yitzchak Weitz and Nachas Yitzchak, as well as Rav Avadi Yosef and Yabia Omer, if you want, I can give you references for all of these. But they disagreed for several reasons. First of all, they said the way we build an Erev isn't with a wall. Right? The way we build an Erev is it's Suras HaPesach. Right? Kanami kanva, kanal gabay. And you have a post, and wires running across the top. And they said that we may accept that for certain areas of halacha as a valid wall, as a valid enclosure. But you can't tell me that it really should now be applicable across the board to say that what's inside is considered one community. That's number one. Number two, the Erev could then include distant populations that never get together at all and don't see themselves as one community, which is an important point we're going to come back to. And further, they said, and here's the kicker, Ramot also has its own Eruv. if you're going to say, well, Ramot is part of Yerushalayim because Yerushalayim's Erev circles Ramot, however, because of certain issues in Halacha, the people of Ramot prefer to also have an Erev that's just their own and that doesn't extend through this way. So is that an act of secession? We're not really part of Yerushalayim because we built our own Erev.
Yeah, parts of Toronto, they're like that.
Yes.
There's own Erev within Yerushalayim. Is that the same problem?
Oh, you mean even with Yerushalayim, you should say they don't consider themselves one community. Maybe. That argument could be made.
It's from Shabbos.
What do you mean?
Can you walk then from Yerushalayim to Ramat because it has an Erev, or is it not because it's from Shabbos?
So the Erev will help you for the Tchum purposes.
Okay.
Yeah, you can't run out of the Tchum if you're inside the Erev. It's considered to be residential. So this also fits the debate about history versus today. If it's about historic identity, I have no reason to care about the Erev today. You can't tell me that yesterday we didn't have an Erev, and therefore they read Megillah on the 14th of Adar. However, now we put up an Erev, and poof, now they read on the 15th of Adar. If you care about history, the Erev doesn't change a thing. So it's another way in which that debate becomes relevant. So I've stated two different ways to define cities. One is physical contiguity. The second is, are they one reshus? But there actually is a third way to define a city. And that is a shared identity, and Rosh Shlomo Zalman adopts this one too. Take a look at source number 11. Also, Halicha Shlomo for Purim. Kol ha-shchunos ha-shayachos likrach be'inyanei ha'ir. All neighborhoods that are associated with the city, as far as city affairs, could go in misim va'arnoniyot, taxes. Do you pay taxes to the municipality? Nidonos kikrach, that's part of the city. V'lachein kol shchunos Yerushalayim av hamru chakos kishchunat ramot uchdomeh nogin vohen dinei purim v'tesva v'lo b'yedalad. He says that's considered part of the city. You pay taxes to the city, you're part of the city. And therefore, you read Megillah on the 14th. Pesach.
We pay taxes to government, but then it's
50. Right, but there it's identified as federal. In other words, that's not called a city tax.
But those transfer money.
Right. But it's called a federal tax, fundamentally. It's not called a municipal tax.
Yeah.
It's not an identity of the local city. It's not the city of Toronto.
Arnona.
You know? Yes, Arnona, that's the word. So that's the argument that he brings. Rav Asher Weiss thought that was very difficult. And we'll see why. In a little bit. The Ritva and the Ran are going to define certain things based on cities that areas that join with a city. You'll see why this is difficult.
But that's also not historical.
But it's also not based on history, it's based on today.
Yeah.
Correct. So we have three different ways to define a city. If I take the view of physical contiguity, Ramot is not in. If I take the view of being part of the Eruv, maybe it is. Unless its own Erev is an act of secession. If I take the view of you pay taxes to the city, then they're in. They pay taxes to the city. So that matters. However, even if the answer really is physical contiguity to be part of the city itself, we extend the status of the city in terms of reading on the 15th of Adar to areas beyond the city anyway. One is called an area that is Samuch, and the other one is called an area that is near A. And we're going to explain each of them. First, we do Samuch. Take a look, please, at source number 12. Right, you're clear on what we're doing? First, we ask the question of, is Ramot part of Yerushalayim itself? And we said it depends on your definition of being part of. Is it a historical definition? Is it a contemporary definition? Is it about physical? Or is it about other criteria? But now we get to the issue of Samuch. We're not going to spend a whole lot of time on Samuch because Samuch doesn't really apply to Ramot. But you can't discuss this issue without at least having some discussion of the criteria of Samuch. Samuch literally means next to. Take a look at the Gemara in Megillah, source number 12. Amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, krach v'chol ha-samuch lo, v'chol ha-nira imo, nidon k'krach. A city, and everything that is next to it, and everything that is visible with it. We'll talk about that phrase later. Nidon k'krach has the status of a krach. What exactly is samuch? What do you mean next to? Ad kama. So Am Rabbi Yirmiya, v'item Rabbi Chiya bar Abba. Rabbi Yirmiya says, some said Rabbi Chiya bar Abba said, k'me chamson l'tiberia. Meal. A meal. A meal is roughly a kilometer. It's 2,000 amos. So he says, like the distance from Chamsun to Tveria, one meal. To which the Gemara asks, Nu, Valema meal. Why did you need to give me Chamsun and Tveria as your examples? Why don't you just say a meal and be done with it? We know what a meal is. Hakamash Malan, the Shira de Mil, Kamahavi, Kame Chamsun to Tveria. The answer is, no, because we've also now told you that if you want to know what a meal is, it's like Chamsun to Tveria. Remember that the Chachamim are based in Tzipori. So you're very familiar with Chamsun to Tveria. That's that area. So it's a nice example. It actually has relevance a little bit later on, too. So that's his statement. He says, if you have a walled city, the walled city reads on the 15th, and anybody who's near it reads on the 15th, near it meaning within a meal. So why is this? Well, the Ture Evan, Rabbi Leib Ginsburg, gives you a very interesting explanation, which becomes very controversial. In source number 13. This is, it seems, solidly in the camp that says, I care about the city's contemporary identity. E efsher dezu tekaye mitzvas purim biyadalid vizu betezvav. He says, it's impossible that what you're going to say is that this city over here is observing on the 14th of Adar, and this city is observing on the 15th of Adar. He says, it can't be. The nearest kier achas, they look like one city, chalukim b'minhagim elu me'elu, but having different practices. We're in source number 13. Umechze mili de rabbanon kechucha. You're going to make the words of the rabbanon, the laws of the rabbanon, look like a joke. Shalalu karin ve'osin mishta v'simcho sh'ar mitzvos hayom, because these, on one side, are going to be celebrating and performing all the mitzvos of Purim. Ule'elu yom zekishar kalim basachol, and on the other side, everybody is treating it as a weekday. Except they don't say Tachanun. But that's what you're going to cause in the event that you say that Samuch doesn't observe Purim with the walled city. So the Ture Evans argument is that the reason why we say that those next to the walled city observe like the walled city does is because it would be a big joke if you didn't. You can't do that. And that follows the view that we noted above that says that it's based on now, not based on conditions in the time of Yehoshua. Because what I care about is the people who are there now. So take a look at source number 14 where the Chazon Ish puts it in writing. He says, V'din samuch v'nira, the rule of those who are adjacent to the city, or for that matter, who are seen with the city, which we'll talk about, ain't tzarech she b'imei Yehoshua ben Nun. That doesn't mean those who are near it in the days of Yehoshua. V'lo b'shas ha'neis, so the time of Purim, dimke nafel b'beira, din samuch, because if you were to do that, then the whole law of samuch wouldn't make any sense. Literally, it would collapse. She'i efshar lanu lada, it would fall into a pit. She'i efshar lanu lada, sim hayu batim benuyas chutz l'choma, samuch l'choma. Good luck trying to figure out which areas had houses outside of walled cities back in the days of Yehoshua and the days of Shushan. It would be nonsense. And the poskim did not make any such requirement that it had a house there back in the day. If it's near now, then it's near. That's the rule. It's based on today. So the rule is, says the Chazon Ish, samuch means that right now it is adjacent to the city, which means the following. Let's say, go back to our map, we said that Ramot in the northwest corner is not contiguous with Yerushalayim. It's not within a mile of Yerushalayim. We said it's a couple of kilometers. If at some point in the future they actually do build out from Yerushalayim, Ramot will now be called Samuch. That will be the rule. And even though you'll tell me they weren't Samuch in the past, it doesn't matter. Chazon Ish says, I care about today, which makes sense according to the Ture Evan. Because he says our whole point is you don't want to have one population observing two different things. Now they're one population, and I don't want to observe two different things. On the other hand, Rabbi Chiyo Michal Tukachinsky, as well as the Ma'aril Diskin, said absolutely not. The Ma'aril Diskin, in source number 15, I brought you this very terse extract. He says, he's big Rav in Yerushalayim in the beginning of the 20th century. He says, Vaday toli eich shahaysa ha'ir b'mei Yehoshua. It depends on how the city was in the days of Yehoshua. That's the way we define samuch. If there is an area outside of a walled city that was settled in the days of Yehoshua, then yeah, that's the way we're going to do it. Then we'll have them observe on the 15th of Adar. But otherwise not.
You can go one way and not the other, though.
Meaning?
Meaning you could have something that today is not smooth, but was smooth then.
Yeah.
And he may be referring to that because he didn't have.
Either way.
He didn't enter his mind the other way that the city would be so popular.
I don't know if he didn't enter his mind. He was dealing with the debate practically already in his day. But yes, theoretically, you could have it the other way too. How do you define samuch? So we already said it's one meal. So there's a lot of debate, which we're not going to go into right now, just again, because it's not so relevant for the Ramot question. But one debate is it as the crow flies, one meal, or does it include dips and rises in the road? Right? You could end up traveling a meal in the sense that your Fitbit will say you traveled a meal, but laterally, you know, Google Maps will say, no, you didn't. Another debate that comes up, the Ira Kodesh has a discussion about that. Another debate comes up because of the Kapachayim. You know that for various laws of travel, we don't actually go based on distance, but we go based on time. For example, there's a big debate regarding issues like Tfilas HaDerech. Not only Tfilas HaDerech, the distance you're supposed to travel from the Tfilas Yadayim, or the distance you're supposed to travel to daven with a minyan. When we say that it's traveling a meal, does that mean a meal, a kilometer? Or does it mean 18 minutes of travel? Because the standard definition of a meal, subject to some debate but generally accepted, is a meal is a distance you would travel if you were walking for 18 minutes. So does that mean then, now I can take a car, I can get a lot further in 18 minutes. I can take a plane. I can get a lot further than a helicopter. So does that change your definition of samuch? So that's another discussion that we're not going to have right now. But it's a very interesting one. The Kaf HaChaim suggested that, yeah, it's 18 minutes of travel. And Rav Avadya and the Abiya Omer says absolutely not. The Rav Chaim HaChatzon Kaczynski rejects it as well in Ira Kodesh V'Hamikdash. He says absolutely not. He doesn't want the border changing every time we come up with a new advance in travel. Oh. I'm actually going to go a little further with this now. Just because otherwise we won't get to the part that is remote relevant. I'm looking at the time and realizing how much there is still to cover. Ask me after though, please. Okay. The other question that comes up is where do you measure your meal from? Do you measure the meal from the end of the city, do I measure it from the wall? The Ira Kodesh V'Hamikdash, his position, which I brought you in number 17, but I won't read it out here, his view is, you go with the original wall. Because remember, he doesn't like the whole idea of expanding to the outside. He said it's the physical barrier of the wall. So he says you only measure your meal from the wall itself. That's his position. The Chazon Ish says, the meal of Samuch is measured from the current physical walls of the city. That's the Chazon Ish's position. And then the Kaf HaChaim says you measure it from the end of the city, which may itself extend beyond the walls. That's its own discussion. The bottom line is that Ramot is not Samuch to Yerushalayim. You have a gap. However, Rav Asher Weiss says something that's very interesting in this regard, and that's why I brought you the Pasuk in source number 18. Take a look, please, at number 18. Vayamas Shmuel. Shmuel passed away. It's in Shmuel HaNavi. Vayikabtsu kol Yisrael. All Israel gathered. Vayispedulo. They eulogized him. Vayikberuhu biveso barama. And they buried him in his house in Ramah. That's where he's buried, also known as Ramatayim Tzofim, if you remember the pasuk in the beginning of Shmuel. Well, he writes, we believe that this had a wall in the days of Yehoshua. Because the Yerushalmi in Megillah says the cities around Yerushalayim back in the day had walls, as well as the cities mentioned in Yehoshua. And the city of Ramah is mentioned in Yehoshua Perek Yates. So therefore, Ramot will end up reading, not because it's on the 15th of Adar, not because it's near to Yerushalayim, but because it's near to Ramah, where Shmuel was buried. That's the remarkable argument that he makes. He writes in his tshuva, yeah, I know there are a lot of reasons to disagree with what I'm saying. And it's okay, because he has other reasons to observe on the 15th of Adar in Ramot anyway. For starters, if those who were here when we discussed Cheles, right, he wasn't willing to accept all the different evidence that was being brought, because he said you can come up with counter-arguments. Like when you say that there are achronim who say that this thing is called this species called the purpura is the chilazon, how do you know that when they said 200 years ago this is the purpura, that's what we call the purpura today? So how do you know that what they called Rama back then is what you're calling Ramat today. I mean, there are many arguments you could bring regarding that point, but it's too fascinating to ignore. Okay, Samuch is one argument. The more potent argument when it comes to Ramot is the phrase Nir'ah. We saw already the Gemara in source number 12, which said, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi made the statement that you read on the 15th of Adar, not only in the walled city, but also if something is Nir'ah imo, visible with it. So the Turei Aven makes a lot of sense with that, right? He said the point is these communities see themselves as one, and therefore you can't have some people here doing it one way and some people there doing it another way. It fits the idea that the Chazon Ish proposes, that it's based on conditions now, not back in the days of Yehoshua. And I noted for you in source number 19, Samuch aval pi she'eno nir'ah, nir'ah aval pi she'eno samuch. It's sufficient to be visible from the walled city, even if it's not adjacent to the walled city. Now, there is some debate as to how to read this. There are those who read it in a different way, specifically the Ir HaKodesh Ramikdash Rav Tukhachinsky. Nonetheless, that's the general understanding, is that as long as it is either Nira or Samuch, that's good enough. It need not be both. However, we now have a big problem we have to solve. What do the words Nira Imo mean? I've translated it two different ways already. I don't know if anyone caught me on it, but I translated it two different ways already. What do the words Nir'ah Imo mean?
The first way you said it's seen with it, like they consider themselves one city, which is not, sounds like a visual thing.
Yeah. And the other way?
They see each other.
They see each other, right.
All out of sight.
So there are actually three different ways that this is taken in Poskim. The vast majority of writers until contemporary times read Nir'ah Imo as seen from. Can you see from one into the other? And frankly, that's the simple sound of the Gemara itself when it talks about the question. The Gemara asks, can you give me a case in which a city is Nir'ah but not Samuch? Visible but not near. And they say, yeah, what if it's at the top of a mountain? Right? If it's the top of the mountain, so you can see, because it's on a peak, so you can see down into your city from there, but it's not within a kilometer of the city. It sounds like what they're saying is that it's visible from.
Hebron.
Sorry?
Hebron is like that.
Okay, Hebron may be an example of that.
So then this has to be one-way seeing?
So then the question is, do you need one way or do you need it both ways? So we're going to have to come back to that a little bit, actually. The second view is that Nir'ah Imo actually means seen with by an outside observer. In other words, if I were looking at the cities, would I see this Ramot with Yerushalayim? The Rav Asher Weiss takes that view. And he says it doesn't mean somebody standing between the two cities being able to see both. Rather, it means an outsider looking at both from afar. It's source number 20, taken from his tshuva. He says, "Adayin yeshli hisstapek." There's room for doubt. Ha'im daiba masha efshar liros gamas akrach v'gamas hanira imo mimakom shlishi. Shemenu efshar liros eshneim zemi amin v'zemi small haroa. Do we mean guys standing in between? And he looks right, and he sees Yerushalayim, and he looks left, and he sees Ramot, and now we say Nir'ah Imo, it's seen with the other. Oshema, or perhaps, and I think this is the view he favors, Tzarech Riyah Achas, you need one looking, one act of looking, Uvmabat Echad, and with one gaze, Ro'im Eshnei Ha'arim, you see both cities. Hakrach Ve'asamuchlo, the walled city and the adjacent one. Such that you see the walled city as the essential city, and then this outlying area as being part of the walled city. And he quotes support from Rabbi Meir HaMe'ili in the Sefer HaMe'orot. Rabbi Meir HaMe'ili, this is a late found work, but it's very old. Rabbi Meir HaMe'ili is of Narbonne in the early 13th century. But it was a manuscript that was discovered fairly late in the game. But look at what he says. Nir'ah Imo, Nir'ah Lefaresh, Nir'ashahu imo. When we say visible with it, what it means is it looks like it's with that city. Klomar. Shenira merachok la'adam shu davu klo. Someone looking at it from afar would say, yeah, that looks like it's part of the bigger city. Ve'ava pi she'eno simuch tocha payim amah. Even though it's not within 2,000 amos. Deka nami dechsiv nir'ah imo v'lo amar nir'ah mimenu. Because look at the language of the Gemara. It didn't say visible from it. It said visible with it. So if I look at my map, right, back on the first side, it sure looks like it's part of the city to me. And I'm looking at it aerially, which is probably not the vantage point you're supposed to use. But but it sure looks like it is part of the city. So that's a second definition of nir'ah imo. One view is, can you see from one to the other? Second view is, when you look at them, does it look like it's part of the other? And then there's a third view, and this is a daring view. The daring view says it's actually not nir'ah in the sense of visibility. Nir'ah in the sense that, you know, when we say vayara lokim kitov, Hashem saw that it was good, it's to perceive. But it's not about vision, it's about perception. Is this perceived as part of the bigger city? In truth, nobody eliminates the vision requirement. Meaning, no one who proposes the idea of perception actually says, and not vision at all, and now we're going to include a town that's far away just because they're on the same plane. We're not actually going to do that. However, Rav Asher Weiss comes awfully close to taking that stance. I thought I brought it on the sheet. I see that I didn't. That's too bad. But he says, yeah, no, I really didn't bring it. Oh, I see why I didn't bring it. In number 22, I brought you the Meiri, which is what he's based on. That's why. He bases himself in part on the Meiri. The Meiri in source number 22 says, V'nirin ha-devarim, it appears, V'nir'a'imo, when we talk about something being seen with it, shumeoso mechoz, that it's part of that neighborhood, V'tafel ha'oso krach, it's part of that city, al derech masha'amu b'cheshbonu b'vnoseh ha-beit, sha'anu b'vnoseh ha-in Tanakh, we refer to a city and its outlying towns, its suburbs. It isn't about being seen physically. It's about the way that we view this. Is this really considered part of the bigger city? And the truth of the matter is that I think there's a lot of support for this in the Rishonim. The Ran writes, I brought it for you in number 23, Rabbeinu Nisim. He says, when the Gemara says, and how far is it? And Rabbi Yirmiyah says, from Chamson to Tveria, the Ran writes in the end of this source, he says, "Eino nirashim hayaracho kama parsos mipnei sharon oso mina krach yenidon kikrach." If there are many parsa between them, but you're able to see it from there, we're not going to consider it part of the city. It's really about, is it perceived to be part of the city, not is it visible from. You follow? What the Ran is saying in number 23 is, you actually can end up being more lenient based on visibility than makes sense. Let me say it a little bit differently. You could look at this third approach, the perception approach, as a leniency, and say, if the perception is that this town is part of this city, then we count them even if you can't see from one to the other. But actually, it could be a stringency also, and that's where the Ran is using it. He's saying, the fact that you can see from one to the other isn't sufficient. You also have to have this perception that this is a suburb of the walled city. Similarly, we have a Ritva in source number 24, and then I'm going to sum up what we've done to make sure that this is somewhat clear. Take a look at 24. The Ritva, when explaining the logic of including Samuch Venira in the walled city, he says, Kaven demagnu b'socheir b'sha'as sara. He says, when there's a problem, when there's a war, the people living in the outlying areas go to sleep in the city for safety. And that's where they join in for all their affairs. So they're considered part of the city as far as Megillah, because that's where they're going to go for shelter. It's about this perception that they're part of the city. By the way, this is the argument against Rosh Shlomo Zalman from earlier. When Rosh Shlomo Zalman said that if you pay taxes to the city and so on, you're part of the city, then why did the Ritva need to say that if you go sleep in the city for your defense, that you're considered samuch? According to Shlomo Zalman's argument, you're part of the city proper. You're already joining the city. So that's one of the arguments against Shlomo Zalman's position from before. But to make sure that we're somewhat clear on what we've done, okay, because we've gone a little bit quickly. The city proper, right? We said that the city itself is defined as having certain limits. The limits of the city are A, possibly physical, with the end of contiguity, or potentially second view if they're part of one reshus, as in they have a common eruv, or a third view is that a shared identity is sufficient. That was Shlomo Zalman. If you pay taxes to the city, right? That was our definition of the city itself. And if I take the latter two, the Eruv, or the shared identity for taxes, Ramot could actually be considered part of Yerushalayim, and we concluded our discussion. We expand the city with Samuch to that which is near the city, meaning within a kilometer. There's some debate as to where you start measuring your kilometer, but that's a basic rule. We said Ramot is not within a kilometer of Yerushalayim. However, it's within a kilometer of what may be Ramah, which may have had a wall in the days of Yoshua, and therefore get into it that way. And then third, we said we also expand the walled city to Nirah, to that which is visible with the city. And we said there are three different ways to understand visibility with the city. One is visible from the city. A second way is visible with the city from an outside observer. And third is it isn't about visibility, it's about perception. Is it perceived to be part of the city? If I take the view that visibility means the last perception, then it's certainly considered part of Yerushalayim and part of, therefore, this walled city, and you're good. If you take the view of being seen with by an outside observer as well, Ramot seems to be part of the city. But let's say we take the view that says that it means to be seen, like literally seen, not perceived, you also need to ask certain additional questions. First of all, you need to ask, what is it that's being seen? Is it the wall, or is it the city? Right? Is it the wall, or is it the city? Rav Yitzchak Weiss, the Minchas Yitzchak, makes the argument in source number 25. He says, he says, even if when you're dealing with samuch, you say that it means 2,000 amos from the extended city, based on all the areas they built outward, when it comes to nirah, being visible, it means from the wall. You have to actually be able to see from the wall to this outlying area, or from the outlying area to the wall. That's of Yitzchak Weiss's position. Rav Asher Weiss says of this, I don't know why you assume that. I don't know where that came from. I don't know why that should be so. I think that's also part of the general debate about the ongoing. Is it the historical identity of the city or the contemporary one? Another question. How much of the community has to be visible from the walled city, or the third-party observer? Do you have to be able to see all of Ramot? Do you have to need to see part of Ramot? What if part of Ramot can see into the walled city, but part of Ramot cannot see from the other? The Meiri's language is startling. He actually says in source number 26, Kol Oso Hakfar, the entire town. But the Har Tzvi, Tzvi Pesach Frank, says that's clearly not what the Meiri means based on context. It doesn't fit, and he thinks it's a mistake in the edition. The popular view follows the view of the Ma'aril Diskin. Ma'aril Diskin says you can't split communities. You have this whole losis go-to-do issue that we try not to have different practices in one city, not to mention we have that Turei Evan that you don't want things to turn into a joke. So he says you can't tell me that, let's say, part of Ramot can see the wall, and part of Ramot cannot see the wall. So where you can see the wall, then you're going to observe on the 15th. And when you can't see the wall, you're going to observe on the 14th. You want to talk about turning everything into a joke? That's a good way to do it. he says you go with Nira, even if only a minority can see. That's already good enough. That's his stance. You need to ask, where is your viewer standing? Is your viewer standing on the ground? Is your viewer standing on the roof? Do they have a water tower? What exactly is he standing on? That's the Minchas Yitzchak asks this question of where is the observer standing? And the Ir HaKodesh V'Hamikdash, Rav Tukhachinsky, says, well, clearly, it has to be standing on the ground. Because otherwise, whenever there's new construction, the rules are going to change. You build taller buildings, you build skyscrapers, and now you're going to change where people read Megillah. Because remember, his view is the historical view. You go back to the way it was. However, I think that if you take the view of the Tereyev and the Chazon Ish and so on, you're going to say it doesn't matter. Yes, it can change. If they couldn't see before and they can see now, then indeed that will change where you read the Megillah. There's also another discussion. Is Nira the unaided eye? What if I have a telescope? Ostensibly, a telescope does not count. Rabbi Schnall in his article has a little piece about this in there as well. Ostensibly, telescope does not count. But the upshot of this is that Ramot may be considered part of the city itself. Certainly if I take Rosh Shlomo Zalman's remarkable position about paying taxes to the city, but even if I just take the view of Eruv, it is not Samuch, but it certainly could be called Nir'ah. You certainly could call it Nir'ah. If Nir'ah is perception, definitely so. If Nir'ah is visible to an outside observer as though it's part of the city, then Ramot will be part of the city. And if I take that it means visible from one to the other, certainly part of Ramot can see into part of Yerushalayim, and vice versa. So, not to where the wall was. Correct. So I would have to be working with the contiguous parts, the Yibura Shalir, in order to say that. So Rav Avadia Yosef's position historically was that you should observe in Ramot on the 14th of Adar. However, as a Midas Chasidus, to be pious, you could also read Megillah again and do the mitzvahs again on the next day without a bracha. That was his position. And the Minchas Yitzchak, Rav Yitzchak Weiss, agreed with him. Rosh Shlomo Zalman Orbach and the early chief rabbis of Yerushalayim disagreed, and Rav Yashiv went along with them eventually, ditto Rav Asher Weiss, and they say, no, that's not true. They say that that Ramot should be observing, for all of the reasons that we've mentioned, Ramot should be observing Purim on the 15th day of Adar, and from what I understand, that is the general sense in Ramot today, I think, is that they observe on the 15th day of Adar. Alan, you had a question before. We have 2 minutes.
Yeah, I was going to say that now in modern times, we're getting back to walled cities, like we were talking about.
Oh boy.
Like San Diego.
Now I'm glad that I left that one. Walled cities and walled countries. Okay. Shkaya. Thank you very much. Next week.